Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Runtime. I'm your host, Raphael Kennedy, and this is the podcast where we go deep into software design. Before we get started, I wanted to introduce my guest, a well-known figure in the open source community. Andre Staltz is the creator of Manyverse and CycleJS. Thanks for coming along. This conversation runs a little shy of half an hour, but we go to some interesting places. Welcome, Andre, and thank you so much for taking the time to join me. This is going to be the first part of a two-part episode, and we're going to talk about Cycle.js. And next week, we'll get into Manyverse, which is a really fascinating project that's being built on top of it. For those who aren't familiar with it, Cycle.js is a front-end framework, and it has some things in common with React that I'd love to get into in our conversation. From the outside, it seems like its defining feature is that it's radically committed to functional programming principles, and a whole application is expressed as a single function that's passed a stream of events, and it returns an object of streams of I/O effects and syncs. And this is something that really... it scratches an itch in my brain to see a front-end application built in this way. And I just wanted to talk with you a little about why you wanted to build this, what it was that you felt wasn't there in existing web frameworks, and why this needed to exist.
Yeah, thanks, Raphael, for having me. So Cycle.js, to give some context, I created it in 2014, roughly. I think React came out in 2013. So when I saw React, I did resonate with quite a lot of good ideas there, such as the virtual DOM. Well, primarily, the virtual DOM is what I really liked from it. But I was quite bothered about the API. You know, back then in the days, it had create class and you pass it an object. It had mix-ins and all of that stuff made me go like, no, this is wrong. So I was also an open critic of React, which some people didn't like. But I think my point is that I was trying to discover what would a reactive framework look like. And I saw React and I was like, this gets some things right, but it's missing so much from what I experienced with RxJava. So my background, I was doing mobile apps with RxJava. And what sets it apart is that it gives a good, or no, I wouldn't say the word good, like it gives a clear and consistent architecture for modeling your app using streams. And it does that in a very consistent and predictable way that, you know, everything is going to be a stream here. So whenever you think, how should I do this or that, you know, well, it is through streams, it is through piping them together and combining them. It sort of like grounds you into this, framework. Here's where you're going to frame. Here's a frame for you to put your work in. And I think it is significantly set apart from React. Some people back in the days when I was making Cycle.js, they said, well, like, oh, well, you'll just end up recreating React. And that's like far from the truth. So turns out that React is mostly good for the visual part of UI. I can talk about that later, but like UIs can be more than visual things, especially for people with accessibility concerns. And like for that part of the app, I actually used other virtual DOM libraries that are tinier and less opinionated than React, such as back in the days it was called virtual-dom. Nowadays I use another one called snap-dom. And these are libraries that only do the virtual DOM diffing and updating the DOM kind of logic. It doesn't do the other parts that React does. And I think what Cycle.js does in comparison to React is that it provides an app architecture. And React doesn't quite well do that because it's, you know, built in Facebook. And there they have the other parts of their large framework. And that includes, I think, Relay and other things. And React is kind of meant for that, but it also has you know, it's kind of like half framework. That's my understanding of React. It doesn't do just virtual DOM, but it doesn't do all the rest of the framework either. So it's kind of in between.
Okay, so an observation I had, sort of playing with both React and Cycle, was that it seemed like Cycle felt much more like a server-side framework, that where you're dealing with incoming, you know, requests. You're treating events, stream of events coming in, and that the UI is sort of one piece of the output that you're generating, whereas React seems like it's kind of built from the other end, that it's starting with a way to generate HTML elements and then moving backwards into being a fully fledged framework.
Yeah. Actually, I've never heard that perspective to CycleJS, but it actually makes a lot of sense. I think we are used to handling events in servers, or maybe let's say we're used to handling like requests in servers, because events obviously we have on the UI. I think the idea of streams are much more commonly found in server code, but streams are kind of taking baby steps into UI. But they make so much sense, because you have events of all kinds and you want to mix them. You want to, or let me say, like, you have events of all kinds and you need to handle all of them. And sometimes you need to handle conflicts between them, race conditions, all kinds of tricky cases. So it makes sense to abstract them as streams, or basically treat a bunch of events as one kind of thing. Right, you wanna be dealing with events in the plural, not events in like the singular and case by case, and you know, gluing them together. That's more error bug prone.
Yeah. So this is a pretty radically different approach. It's definitely more different than some of the other frameworks like Angular and Vue than it is from React, but it seems like a completely different way of thinking to me, working as briefly as I did in CycleJS. Can you talk about some of the trade-offs that things you were trying to make work in CycleJS, and some of the things that you had to sacrifice?
Right. So I knew that streams would be like a sort of north to the project, that I know that there is a elegant way of using only streams for app architecture. And I think the trade-off there was that I tried to eliminate other ways of doing app logic. So other ways such as, you know, basic imperative side effecting code, such as make a request over there, get the response, do something else, maybe even async await, you know, that kind of, I think most of the programmers have this expectation that they can just use imperative code. And I think the trade-off there is that we took such a radical approach that sometimes even the language JavaScript didn't support us quite well to let us do what we want. Like, one of the tricky things in CycleJS is that sometimes you have a cycle. Actually, the whole point of the framework is that it is all of the streams are there, but they're also plugged together as a loop. And there comes the name CycleJS. And the language kind of, like, we had to do a bunch of crazy hacks to make this loop, because you have a circular dependency, like this depends on that, which depends on this. But I think, yeah, like, so the main trade-off is that the people sometimes wanted to do, like, the basic example is an HTTP request, where you just want to do fetch and then get the response. In CycleJS, it's a bit clumsy, where you have to do send the request down as an output and then listen for the response from above, from the inputs. And you can work with that. It's just in case you have to do many of these, like request from here, request from there, and put all these together, then it starts to get kind of clumsy. This is something that we're actually addressing in a new version of CycleJS. We can talk about that later. But in the beginning, it was something that we just had to go like, okay, like try to design your backend so that you don't have to do a bunch of requests one after the other. Just do one request. And this kind of, yeah, I'd say that was the main trade-off. There's others, obviously, a bunch of details. But that's the one that everybody stumbles upon.
You're producing a request over at the output end, and you're consuming its response back at the beginning. Did you find that you needed to like pass more state? Were there or more information along with the request?
Yeah. So one of the things that you had to do with the request is basically name it. So say like, this is request number 17, or just give it a name, and then you would know how to refer to that when the response comes, so that you can tie them together. It's a bit unfortunate, but it's one of the things that we're addressing with the rewrite of CycleJS. But yeah, that's the simple answer.
Okay. Would you like to talk a little bit about the rewrite of CycleJS?
Yeah, I mean, since we're talking about it, so sure. One of the things that we realized is that there are two kinds of ways of interfacing with the outside world. One of them is like streams, and it's the so-called dialogue abstraction that we document in the CycleJS website, where like in the case of UI, you have the user sending in a bunch of events and the application sending out a bunch of outputs. It can be UI or sound or whatever. And that applies well because you don't have necessarily a strict correlation between this output must come from that input. But there are other cases that don't fit well within this dialogue abstraction, which is question and answer type of interaction with the external world, which is the case of HTTP requests, where you do you ask a question such as server, I would like this, and then you get an answer, which is the response. And there are a couple of other cases where you have question and answer type of interaction, such as basic random number generators. You basically tell the random number generator, I want a new number, and it's a side effect, it's impure, and the random number generator will give you back an answer. And you always have this strict correlation between I must have an answer for this question. So we started thinking about that and how does it fit within CycleJS, and we realized that is just the concept of pool streams. So CycleJS used RxJS, and now we're using Xtreme, and all of those are push-based streams. So they're just stream of events that just keep on going out, and you don't have control over, like, you don't request anything from those streams. You just say, I'm interested in what these things that are happening, and then it shoots at your face. Or another analogy that's less violent. But there are also the so-called pool streams, and those are, for instance, async iterators in JavaScript. Those are using the pool abstraction. And there you have basically the concept of, give me the next piece of data from this rope. You're just like pulling the rope and you keep on asking for it. And basically each item that you get as a result of you asking for it. So we didn't have that abstraction in CycleJS, and we started to think of ways of adding that so that we can have both push and pull, and that would make it much easier to do HTTP requests and similar kind of things, such as math random, if you want to keep the app actually impure. If you want to just have impurity just for pragmatic purposes, then just go ahead and do it. You could even do HTTP requests using fetch in an impure way. Just go ahead and do it. But if you want to have your app pure so that it's easier to test or easier to reason about and debug, then we need to have those kind of pull streams. So that's what we started to do. We started making a new stream abstraction called callbacks that basically have both of these semantics, push or pull, in the same primitive. And we found a way, actually, of converting all of these pull into push. So basically, the API for the user, or I mean the developer, right, the user of the framework, would be would look like I am pulling a value out of this thing, but under the hood, it would always be translated to push. That's what we're doing. So there's like a layer of API, but under the, like at the very low level, your app will be a function that only has inputs as push streams and outputs as push streams. And all of those would be using the kind of ID matching that I mentioned before, that you have to like give an ID for the request and get that ID from the response. So under the hood, we're doing those conversions. And this would, this is necessary so that we keep the same kind of fundamental guarantees that you need for testing, or even like wrapping your app in more tools and things like that. So that's like the main project that's being done now to rewrite CycleJS. It's being spearheaded by Jan van Brugge, who's in Munich. He's a core contributor. And we just need time and resources to do it. It's such a big project, but it's getting there and it's looking very nice.
That sounds great. They're definitely, it seems like an appealing way to put some sugar around a difficult developer experience piece while still maintaining the purity of the framework. So we talked a little bit about some of the trade-offs. Can you talk a bit about some of the early design decisions that you made that may have ended up being, I'll say, wrong, but counterproductive?
Sure. And like most of the learning I did was related to just how to run an open source project, especially what to do with a bunch of feature requests and how to include the community in a way that's welcoming, but also you're sort of like defending the framework, but you're also trying to like filter in the good ideas, defending in the sense that like if you just add what everybody asks for, then you end up with something that's not consistent, especially in the case of CycleJS, where you're it's built around this core guarantee. But I think on the technical side, so we started by building it on top of RxJS, which I think was a wise decision, because building a stream library is quite difficult, and RxJS at that time was huge. It had all kinds of operators that we needed, so it was productive at that time to use it instead of building some custom stream library. But also at some point we realized that for performance and for debuggability, it would be better to have another stream library. So then we made Xtreme. Now I think, in my opinion, one of the most counterproductive things I did was I tried to keep support for RxJS alongside Xtreme and also another stream library called Most, M-O-S-T. And that, I think, costed more in terms of maintenance than it gave benefits to framework users. I think when it comes to like a small team and a framework that's like dedicated for a small core ideas, you know, like only use streams, it would be good to support only one stream library and have more time dedicated to other things other than just maintaining bugs that happen in different stream libraries when using CycleJS. So it's still supported, actually. But yeah, and I think it's something that we still have to keep to some degree with the rewrite, because we're going to have callbacks and Xtreme. So it's just a little bit difficult, but those are the things that we end up living with.
Yeah, so how have you tried to balance that? We don't have to get too deep, but talking about, were there ways that you were able to isolate the vagaries of these different stream implementations from the behavior of the actual CoreJS, or sorry, the actual CycleJS core?
Yeah, so the behavior of CycleJS core is pretty isolated to what stream library people use, because in the end of the day, the all of these stream libraries, they support sending a bunch of events down the pipeline, and that's all that we need. We don't need anything else sophisticated in order to build the core of CycleJS. So what happens is that you build your app with whatever streams libraries you want. You can even have more than one stream library in the same app. CycleJS is not concerned with that. It's just concerned that once it gets those outputs, can it convert it to the basic stream library, the basic sort of like underlying stream concept? It usually can convert. I don't see a problem there. It's just a matter of having to deal with different users and different expectations and having to maintain these libraries. It's, in the end of the day, three additional libraries that we have to use. So it's a little bit clumsy.
All right. Is there anything else that's, you know, something big coming down the pike for CycleJS?
Well, that is the main thing. But I still would like to see more people combining CycleJS and React. So at the beginning of this podcast, I did mention React quite a lot. But if you look at it as just a virtual DOM library or just a, you know, rendering layer, then it enables you to do all kinds of things, especially through React Native. And that's how I'm actually using CycleJS in a couple of projects, is that I combine it with React in order to use all of the React ecosystem, whether it's like third-party component libraries or it's React Native or something else. That's really powerful. So we built a compatibility layer between React and CycleJS. And I think that's the thing where I'd like to see people exploring that, because I think the parts that React doesn't answer, I think CycleJS answers well. And I mean this half framework thing that I mentioned, and it makes sense. So there's a way of sort of abstracting React so that you don't have to think of it as a framework. And yeah, it's just an exciting thing to work with. And I've been exploring how to do different kinds of navigation libraries. So navigation is a big deal when it comes to single page apps and also mobile apps. And I think I'm finding a nice way of doing that with Cycle and React. So I'm building a couple of libraries. One of them is called Cycle Native Navigation, meant for React Native. And the other one is very similar to that, called Cycle Native Navigation Web. I might get these names wrong sometimes because they're so long. But the point is that it's nice to see how I can combine these two worlds and get the best of both.
Yeah, that definitely, it seems like, you know, an implicit trade-off, even in the undertaking of building a new framework, is you have these, you know, network effects of thousands and thousands of React developers building, you know, building tooling or new component libraries or, you know, knowledge base articles. And that if there are ways that your new nascent library can incorporate some of that network effect, so you're not saying, oh, in order to use CycleJS, I have to abandon the component libraries that my application is designed in.
Speaking about interoperability, back in the days, which days were those? 2016, I guess. Web components were a thing that sometimes people mentioned as promising. Kind of wish that
I mentioned them as promising.
Yeah, I kind of wish that would have been a thing. So there's a couple of problems. There is the problem of adoption of web components. There's a problem of the web components API that changed over time and made things difficult to adopt. But there's also the problem of, I think, like some people in the React team or X people in the React team were very against web components. And I think, well, if it might not make sense for Facebook, but it did make sense for the overall ecosystem of front-end developers, because you could have a component that's built in Vue and you could use it in React and etc. You know, that just makes a lot of sense. And we needed something like that, but that didn't happen. And I think it's okay that we settle on React as the common denominator. So I don't know what's the situation with other frameworks, but it would be nice if you could, like, seamlessly use React components in Vue or in Angular or whatever. Because in the end, they're...
Or in vanilla JavaScript.
Or, yeah, whatever you want. Because in the end, they're kind of similar to DOM elements anyway. You pass them some stuff, they behave, they can be in a tree, they can have children. You know, like, if you sort of take a high-level overview, things should be working together. It's just, I think framework authors have to make an effort to bridge these worlds. I did try a couple of times to make web components with CycleJS. I did succeed to some extent, but the API kept on changing. People didn't use in them, so I kind of dropped that. So I'm not against it. I just would hope that it would be a thing so that if I build it, people would use it. But that's not the case. But React is the case, and that's why I built this interoperability layer, and I'd hope that people would find some use in that.
Well, I think that probably brings us to a close for episode one. Thank you again so much for your time. Is there anything you would like to recommend or to plug, or are there ways that people can get involved in the CycleJS community?
Oh yeah, there's ways people can get involved in CycleJS. It's just the repository. It's just one, and we have issues marked as welcome contributors and things like that. And Jan and I are happy to review issues and review PRs. Yeah.
All right. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, well, that's mostly Twitter. I think you can just send a mention to me and I'll try to answer if it's something honest. Just Andre Staltz is my handle on Twitter.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you again. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks.
And also thank you, listeners. If you have questions or feedback, I can be reached at Rafael, that's R-A-F-A-E-L, at runtimepodcast.com, or on Twitter, at podcastruntime. Please take a moment to subscribe, and if you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating wherever you get your podcasts to help spread the word. I hope you'll join me again next week. So long!